Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how you doing?
I'm good, mate. It's a Tuesday and I am currently recovering from what can only be described as International Rum Day on Sunday. I don't know what day it was yesterday, I don't know what day it is today, but I certainly know there was International Rum Day on Sunday, and I got involved.
Isn't every day International Rum Day for you, Pete?
I'm a rum kind of guy. I'm a rum kind of guy.
Did you drink a lot?
No, I drank a lot on Saturday. I didn't actually drink any rum on Sunday. I was just very excited that I actually knew that Sunday was Rum Day. And I think it was like... what do you call it? Jamaican Independence Day, like 2 weeks ago. And why don't they just combine that? Oh, Jamaican rum, they could be, you know, or maybe they need to ramp up the factories, I don't know. Why didn't they do... Oh, ridiculous.
Yeah, it is a glorious guys. Marketing opportunity. That would have been a great marketing opportunity.
I know, right? I know. Oh, surely dear. Missed. What have you been up to, Chris, in the land of what can only be described as Japan?
I could have done with some rum yesterday, Pete, because...
Why?
As you know, I love yakitori, fried skewer chicken that's nicely cooked over a grill. I eat it at least once a week, given it is my favourite dish in Japan. The simplicity of it all, the marinated chicken, marinated meat, beautiful. But for whatever reason yesterday, I think because I was excited to eat yakitori because I hadn't eaten anything all day, I stuffed a skewer straight through my gum in the top of my mouth, and it was the most painful thing
dear
in recent memory. It went straight through.
Chris.
It was bloody. It was messy.
Chris.
But it didn't stop me from finishing the yakitori.
Chris,
so be careful.
This sounds like a horrible kind of like, and that blood goes everywhere and everyone gets your diseases. This was in a restaurant then. You're just bleeding all over.
It was
the
yakitori
restaurant.
Ugh. I got my, I think it was the first skewer as well. I got like a plate of 10 skewers of chicken, and I picked up the first one, very excited, wasn't really coordinating with my mouth, went in, and the stick just banged into my two teeth, slipped up, and, well, you can...
The rest was history.
It's probably not a nice thing to picture, to be honest.
Did you do a little scream?
I went, oh, no, probably.
Oh, dear. And then you saw the blood and then fainted. Well, I mean, you've just got a new computer, so you've just been... Giving it the big lick, so how cool your new computer is, and now you're in a situation where you've jammed a literal needle, a wooden spear, into your own gum. So these things come in threes. I don't know what's going to happen next.
Very true. I did. I rewarded myself. To get over the pain of stabbing my mouth with a stick, I did buy an iMac thing. It's a big iMac. And also for 7 years hard work, because I've been editing right on a laptop for 7 years.
Yeah.
Don't know how. So difficult. And now I've got like a 27-inch screen in front of me, which is ridiculous and exciting. I've been editing a sushi restaurant video all week, and it's made such a big difference being able to see the timeline, being able to watch the footage, play it back. Why didn't I get one earlier, Pete? Why didn't I get one earlier?
Because you wanted to maintain our friendship, because I've appeared on the Bronze Man channel a couple of times. If you see me in full 4K on a 27-inch iMac, I fear I will not be allowed on your channel again because of the creases and pockmarked face I've got. My terrible skin will be banned from your channel forever.
I don't know if I'm ready for 4K, Pete. I don't know if I'm ready for 4K, me. One of the reasons I've held off doing it is because I just don't really want my face in 4K anywhere, which is it's a bit weird, isn't it? It's a bit of a weird thing to think about. But
yeah,
now we can actually do it, though. We can have 4K abroad in Japan, whatever that might look like. But it's exciting.
Yeah.
Do with 4K.
I couldn't handle my face on the old Super 8 footage I got, so... I mean, I don't know how you're going to deal with looking down the camera lens in 4K. So are you going to be releasing 4K? I know you were a massive 4K sort of agnostic for the longest time. You were saying no to 4K. There's no need for it.
4K agnostic. I like that. Yeah, I guess I've always been a bit like that feeling of people. A lot of my friends often want the latest and best tech and stuff. Yeah. And when it comes to filmmaking, a lot of my friends get like the best cameras that money can buy. But I've made do with the last camera for 3 years and my laptop for 3 years, and it's never stood in the way of the channel. And I think a lot of people kind of forget that the most important thing is having a good story and having good content, right? It doesn't need to be 4K. But I must admit, looking back at the recent Driving in Japan video, that would have been good in 4K, right? I look back at the footage of the kind of the Japanese countryside and I think, bugger, why didn't I get this computer sooner? I would have loved to have seen that in 4K. But it's an excuse to actually go out and do it now. So I will. I will go through the fields and I will get some more footage in 4K and I'll report back to you as soon as possible, Pete. Don't you worry. And I am seeing Natsuki next week, so it's a good time to actually do that. Get Natsuki in 4K.
Natsuki in 4K. Wow, his big face.
Guitar skills.
I enjoyed it. Nice. Happy anniversary, by the way. It was your eighth year on YouTube quite recently.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that. Yeah. I forget every year. Like, it's I think it's August 15th.
Right.
I released my first video, which is just me in my apartment, my kind of first Japanese apartment, sitting on the floor, moping around. Yeah, I forget it every year, but it's quite a significant date for me. One of the only dates I get excited about other than my birthday. And this year, that was a bit of a letdown, wasn't it? So I thought I'd make an extra effort. And a great viewer sent in some fan artwork, which I posted around Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, everywhere. And you're in it, aren't you, Pete?
With my football shirt. when I was on the Football Ramble Tour, a podcast I do about soccer, I was in Liverpool doing a live show and I made my very own Everton / Liverpool shirt, half and half, sewed it together before the match. It was very risky. Several members of the support staff at the venue talk to me or... wouldn't even look in my direction. They were so disgusted with what I'd done. I mean, it's not as bad as when I did Glasgow and did Rangers and Celtic together. It gets a bit spicy sometimes, I guess, when you're in a fit of pique, fit of excitement.
I can imagine. I mean, I didn't know where that shirt had come from. I thought someone had photoshopped that shirt onto the guy that had made the image. I didn't realise it was an actual, real, dodgy football shirt you'd sewn together yourself.
But Natsuki's coming through the door of your little diorama. Ryotaro's on the telly. Exciting. Lovely little picture, boy.
It's nice. It's cool. I think it's nice because, like, when I started, it was just me in a room. And now it feels like a extended cinematic universe, as you so often call it. And I like that. The Abroad in Japan cinematic universe.
Makes your product less brittle because
I'm happy with it. And if you haven't seen the artwork, go and check it out.
Yeah,
if you listen to this, and you haven't seen it.
It does make your product less brittle because the amount of yakitori you eat, you might be in hospital soon, stabbing yourself.
Very true. Very true. One bit of good news though. Going back to the driving video, I got an email the other day from the composer of the song that kicks off the Driving Japan video where I'm going through the scenery and whatnot. You know, there's that really nice kind of music, that Japanese sounding kind of music. It's like Spirited Away or something. It just sounds really nice and ethereal. I got the composer like messaged me and said, "Hey Chris, saw the video. So glad you used the song. Thanks for using it. I've had people kind of message me all week to try and find it." It's a really kind of awesome thing. The composer, he's called Shin Suzuma, and he's actually a British guy. I think his parents are Japanese, or he's half Japanese. But I've been using his music for years. And in the Tsunami documentary that I made back in March, which you aren't in, but you were there for, that video has like three or four of his songs. So it was really nice to have that connection with the artist who's kind of helped make a lot of the best videos this year, kind of helped realize the kind of scenes and the visuals on screen with his beautiful music. So if you want to hear his music, I did promote him on Twitter. I did write him, post it on Twitter and Facebook, Shin Suzuma, and you can find him on SoundCloud, and you can check out the song, which is called Ikebana. It's a beautiful song, and thank you, Shin, for reaching out. It's pretty nice.
Lovely old job.
Nice thing, isn't it, when that happens?
It is. It's lovely to support creators, I think, on both sides.
I think so, yeah. And I'd love to use some of his music going forward. It's absolutely beautiful. Now, last week, we did have a podcast. I haven't done any videos in a while. Podcast on budget dining out options in Japan. And we went through about six, didn't we, Pete? There was about six options, I think it was six types of different foods and about 10, 8 or 9 restaurants. And two of them we mentioned Otoya and Ippudo. And obviously in Japan, they're really cheap. At Otoya, you can have a nice meal for about 1,000 yen, about $10. And Ippudo, you can get ramen for about $6 or $7. But we got a message from a guy called Tim who, unfortunately, both these chains exist in the US, but apparently they're really expensive there. He says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. Tim in New York here. I've been a viewer of the Abroad Japan channel since the early YouTube days. I'm thrilled to get more of the Abroad Japan fix in the form of the podcast. I was recently listening to the episode on what to eat in Japan, and you mentioned Otoya and Ippudo as two places to get a good cost-effective meal. I just wanted to share that this broke my heart a bit to find out, as we also have a few Otoya and Ippudo locations to enjoy in Manhattan. But instead of being sensible places to have a bite, they're presented as something on something of the upper end of the dining scale. A set of Otoya will easily run you $25. $25. And a bowl of ramen at Ippudo tops $20 at the time you add in the soft-boiled egg. My wife and I also ate at the Ippudo in Covent Garden on a trip to London last year and found the presentation to be middling, with the price a bit less dramatic than in New York. Would you happen to know of any, I can't even read that, commensurate, that's a big word, isn't it?
That's a big
would you happen
point.
To know of any commensurate cases of American or UK-based restaurants that are considered cheap or common in their home locales but insanely expensive in Japan? Thanks again for all you guys do. We'll be looking forward to the next episode." $25 for Otoya, that's a little bit extortionate.
It's like it is a little bit
discovering
much,
a McDonald's that's like three times the price of a McDonald's. Do you know of any places, though, Pete, that fit Tim's question? Places that American or UK restaurants that are expensive in Japan. The only one that springs to my mind is KFC, which I think is a little bit more pricey here, and certainly a lot less edible.
But the it's fine. But I think I think the set meals in Japan, I've noticed, are not quite extortionate, but certainly very expensive in McDonald's. But they do have like interesting drinks. Like the Japanese really like ice cream floats that you don't see quite as often over in the UK. Obviously very popular in America, but like kind of melon soda with a lovely blob of vanilla ice cream with some ice. Beautiful.
Melon soda. Why do you like it? I mean, Coca-Cola float. I get it. I was actually at Otoya last week, and for my drink, I ordered a Coca-Cola float. And they asked, like, when do you want it to come out? And I said, I'll just have it before the food. And they were really confused because in Japan, like, floats are seen as like a dessert thing.
Right.
And so they were kind of really, like, the staff came out to check that I was sane. They were like, "Oh, you want your float now?" I'm like, "Yeah, bring me the damn float. Give it to me now.
Give me that float.
Give me my float."
Fantastic.
But, yeah, I mean, that's a shame. I would just avoid Otoya if it's going to be $25 and, you know, premium. It's like, that's a shame, but not unsurprising.
Because Otoya is like a kind of like bento box, kind of like a big kind of set menu kind of thing, isn't it? It's like, I mean, there's a lot of rounds and stuff. So, I mean, for like $25 for a meal that isn't just one thing, I think in New York, what's that, like £20? I mean, that's kind of standard for eating out, I think, in London, certainly. Maybe 15, 16. But yeah, you get a few courses for that amount of money.
And they've got to throw in a tip as well, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Pricey,
yeah, about that.
Pricey stuff.
Indeed.
So the other week, we also talked about how in Tokyo, there's this kind of image, isn't there, that people in Tokyo aren't that friendly compared to the rest of Japan. And in true fashion, you guys have struck back with some of your stories revealing that Tokyo actually is quite a nice place. There's lots of nice people around. So this week, we thought we would read out some of your stories and tales of nice encounters with people in and around Japan, particularly in Tokyo, to prove us both wrong. And to kind of break that kind of image that Tokyo is a bad place when it comes to meeting people. And the first one we've got is from Chrissy. I'm going to let you read that one out, Pete, right, as I take Chrissy. A swig of water.
Chrissy is... No coffee tonight, Chris. That does surprise me. My word. Chrissy.
No coffee.
No coffee. Chrissy, British but living in the Netherlands. Pleasure to have you along, Chrissy. Hi, Chrissy and Pete. I've just added the E in there. I've listened to your most recent podcast in which there was some discussion about whether the inhabitants of Tokyo are less friendly than other places in Japan. I wanted to share my story with you. In November 2019, after a week and a half of visiting various places in Japan, I had learned when asked where we were from that if I answered we are British but we live in the Netherlands, that most Japanese people just heard blah, 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 Netherlands. I was probably speaking too fast. I eventually shortened my response to just from the Netherlands, which I feel after 12 years of living here is not entirely untruthful. After the aforementioned week and a half, we arrived in Tokyo, our last stop before returning home. And the first night there, we were wandering around the Zojoji Temple, where a tiny old lady stopped us and asked where we were from, to which I responded, from the Netherlands. She looked thoughtful for a moment and then wandered off, and we continued on our walk. 10 or 15 minutes later, we were amazed to see the same old lady running after us, walking stick in one hand and waving a pocket notebook in the other, which she handed to me, asking, "Can you teach me how to say this?" I looked at the page she was pointing to, where she had written the Dutch phrase, "Danku vel voor het komen naar Japan." She pronounces Japan in Dutch, Japan, in Dutch meaning thank you for coming to Japan. "Danku vel voor het komen naar Japan." meaning, yeah.
Well,
my heart filled with joy as I read the place phrase to her and heard her repeat it back. And then she explained that she wanted to welcome all the visitors in their own language. I can only imagine that a little notebook was filled with welcoming greetings in God knows how many languages. So I think that some people in Tokyo could become jaded due to the sheer volume of foreign tourists, but there are also people like the lady who we met who more than makes up for it, in my opinion. Thanks for your brilliant work on your podcast and videos, Chrissy, British but living in the Netherlands. Danku vel voor het komen naar abroad in Japan.
I let you read that one out because I knew I would butcher.
I didn't read forward. Danku vel voor het komen naar Japan. Japan.
Nicely done.
Danku vel.
My favorite line in the story was blah 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 Netherlands.
Yeah, I think the problem we had is we sort of grew up. Certainly supporting football teams and stuff. Like the Netherlands, at some point during the 90s, Holland became the Netherlands. Now, obviously, Holland is a principality. It's a small part of the Netherlands, and which is a cool name at the best of times, the Netherlands. And so, like, back in the day, everyone used to just call them Holland, and it was just very confusing. But now, obviously, people are a bit more worldly, and we call it by its correct term, the Netherlands.
The Netherlands. And we do seem to have quite a lot of Dutch viewers and listeners and followers. Do you remember when we were in Sapporo, we had, like, a busload of Dutch folks following us around?
Yeah. Lovely, yeah. I forgot about that. It was really, really nice. I mean, they were fans of you. They weren't fans of me.
There were fans of Natsuki as well. I remember they were trying to convince them to convince me to get to make like Natsuki the movie too. And he harassed them for like half an hour. Nice. I kind of wanted to go and get a signature and a photo with him, and then he wouldn't leave them alone. He was like, "Get Chris to make Natsuki the movie too." And there was like these 10 really nice Dutch guys trying to convince me to do it.
Yeah, we enjoyed it.
But what a nice young lady. Or rather, old lady. going around with a pocket notebook. The fact she sort of disappeared for 15 minutes. Where did she go, Pete? Where did she disappear to? Like her house? Or does she go to like a notebook store and buy a notebook and fill it with a phrase and then meet them again? How did this go down? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, well, I guess she was just collecting them somehow. But what a lovely idea, though, kind of, you know, preparing like welcome messages. I mean, maybe she works in a cafe or something. Maybe she works in a little shop or something. I find that blooming lovely.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is back for a brand new season. It's the podcast where we talk to some of the most exciting people in the world, from Ricky Gervais.
In some ways, fame makes you a better person. You know, it's like, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in God's watching me, but I know someone with
everyone else's.
To undercover police officers.
Can you see the fading scar there, gentlemen?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That's where I was stabbed in the neck by a drug dealer once.
Or we just talk about whatever's making us laugh right now.
When you think back to school kid banter, like, it's well funny because of how immature it is. We had this teacher called Mr. McGibbon, and he had this big cushion that he was teaching us how to rugby tackle on. He just ran up to it, rugby tackled it, but landed on top of it, and one of the kids shouted, "It's not your wife, sir."
That is funny.
Listen to Jackmate's Happy Hour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is a Staccano production.
Lovely story. So there you go, that's our first story. I don't know where the Zojoji Temple is. Do you know where it is?
Zojoji? I don't actually know.
I will look it up. It's in Minato.
Ah.
It's the one next to the Tokyo Tower.
Right, okay.
The kind of nice, big, iconic tower.
Mm.
And a temple I have visited many a time. It's a really nice temple, actually, because you can get a shot of the kind of the shrine of the temple with the tower in the background. So Zojoji Temple, really nice one. And who knows, you might run into the nice lady with the notebook filled with phrases. Bonus. Actually, we do have another. The next one's also a chap from the Netherlands, another Dutch listener. Dennis says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. Last week you asked us to send stories of receiving rather random gifts in Japan. So here's mine. In the spring of 2018, my mum and I went to Japan for a group journey. We went for dinner in Hiroshima. Like Pete, I enjoy my drinks, so I was going great. Your reputation precedes you, Pete. As my level of drunkenness increased, so did my confidence in speaking Japanese. So at the restaurant, I was asking what bars to visit. I was asking, 最高のバーはどこですか? quite literally, "Where's the best bar around here?" This continued in the tram, since I've understood only a part of the instruction. We ended up the streets of central Hiroshima. Again, I asked a passerby where we should go this fine Tuesday evening. This wonderful man, Mr. Greensky, has he made that name
nice.
Up? Doesn't sound like a very Japanese name.
ELO, Mr. Greensky. ELO song. Mr. Greensky.
He said he would happily accompany us. We ended up in some bar occupied by about four people. We talked via Google Translate, although through the evening, while we were getting drunker, he had me try various local drinks. At some point, I started to go to the bathroom, and when I came back, he was gone. We surmised that he was friendly, but just got tired of me and my bad Japanese and finally had an excuse to leave. About 15 minutes later, though, he returned. For the second time in a row, someone's gone off and returned 15 minutes later. It's the perfect amount of time for things to happen in Japan. 15 minutes later, he returned to great applause. It seemed he had gone out to buy a phone charger so we could continue our conversation via Google Translate. But wonderful. He also brought me a bottle of shochu, the drink he had me try, which I exclaimed, "Oishi, delicious." We had a superb evening and I had one of the worst hangovers I've ever had. 100% I'll do it again and I recommend it to anyone. Best wishes, Dennis Van Ruijen.
Ryan?
Did I mess that?
I would go with Ryan on that one.
Dennis Van Ruijen.
Maybe, yeah. The jays are pretty soft in that part of the world, I believe. But yeah, fantastic. So I like the idea that he just... just ran out to a 7-Eleven to buy a muggy little phone charger. Very enjoyable. And that's the, you know what, that's another thing we never talk about, the old Family Marts and the Combinis. They sell a whole wide range of products that you need during the day. New socks. I bought a snood during the snow festival up north. I snood like a scarf, but you just put it over your head like a tube. footballers wear them sometimes.
Right.
In cold weather. And you can buy phone chargers and batteries as well, mobile batteries. And you can buy them 24/7. It's fantastic. For a decent price, yeah. Sure. But look, can you put a price on continuing a conversation with Dennis Van Ruijen from Eindhoven, the Netherlands?
Very true.
You can. It's $9. Yeah,
it's $9. And that's about the price for a charger in 7-Eleven. Pretty pricey. But definitely worth it.
Yeah.
What a lovely story. Yeah. What have we got next, Pete? What's the next heartwarming
Luke
tale?
Luke from Dublin says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. I've been listening to the podcast after discovering the channel over a year ago while planning my first trip to Japan, which was due to happen this year." Oh, Lukey. "Unfortunately, that didn't happen for obvious reasons, but I'm trying to remain optimistic that I'll be able to travel next spring. Before the pandemic, one of my colleagues at work found that I was planning a trip to Japan. She told me about her experience when she worked as an English teacher on the JET program. One story she told me that when she was asked out on a date by a Japanese man, when he arrived at her apartment to pick her up, he handed her a gift. However, she was horrified. Oh, good Lord. Horrified when she opened up the bag to find that the gift was none other than Victoria's Secret underwear. It obviously didn't go down very well, and unfortunately for him, there was no second date. Is it common to give someone a gift on the first date in Japan? Have you ever given or received one? And if so, are the gifts as usually as creepy as this? Thank you for keeping me entertained during quarantine, guys. That's Luke from Dublin's sexy little story."
I have never received Victoria's Secret underwear from any Japanese guy.
The image
to date
makes me want to vom. Quite frankly.
Pretty horrible. Second, what is worse, that image or the image of a yakitori stick going through my gums?
I don't know. It's commensurate, if we're going to use that word again. It's commensurate.
Is it common to give someone a gift on a first date in Japan? Not really, because a lot of first dates in Japan aren't first dates. They're kind of disguised as something else. Like, I remember I think I've been on two dates in particular that stand out, where the first date, that first kind of time we met, would have been under the guise of me teaching them English. They're like, "Oh, won't you teach me English?" And you're like, "Yeah, okay." And I didn't realize that is kind of like secret Japanese chat for "we're going on a date now." It kind of takes some of the awkwardness out, right? It takes some of the expectations out. But there was no gifts that time, except maybe a crappy English dictionary on my part.
Gotta put the awkwardness back in, though, haven't you? If you lose some of the awkwardness, you gotta bash them back in by buying some underwear.
But that's not uncommon. I've heard a few stories actually from female friends who've had an edgy, odd guy, Japanese guy, just bring a get like a something kind of a bit
sexual.
Questionable. Yeah, rather sexual and ruin it quite quickly. And yeah, it's not as uncommon as you'd like to think, unfortunately. So yeah, sorry, Luke. Hopefully, when you come over one day, you will you'll get a much more favourable gift if you ever go on a date. Yeah, God, what was he thinking there? What point do you think that was an appropriate gesture?
Is it kind of like, do they sell kind of Victoria's Secret kind of sexy undies to, it was a Victoria's Secret product. We don't exactly know what it was, but, underwear. Goodness. It's on the bag for crying out loud. But maybe it's sold in a slightly different way to the Japanese as a kind of a cute present rather than an overtly sexual one. I mean, look, we talk about the Japanese having a weird approach and relationship with sex. The West are just as bad, but just in a different way, you'd probably say.
Yeah, true. I saw an advert actually the other day for Head and Shoulders shampoo, and there was a Japanese advert contrasted with, I think it was the British equivalent for Head and Shoulders. I think it's Procter and Gamble makes it, or Unilever. It's obviously marketed differently between countries. I think the foreign one, I'll just say it's British. It's just like a model, like a sports guy. And he's kind of just standing there with a tennis racket or something. But the Japanese one, it's some Japanese celebrity and he's kind of like touching this like girl in a kind of slightly awkward fashion. He's kind of looking a bit suave and sophisticated, leaning in on her. And that is what Head and Shoulders is all about in Japan, apparently. But it's quite interesting seeing how it's kind of conveyed differently in the advertising. Completely different, night and day.
Joe Biden.
I don't know if that ties in with Victoria's Secret. Yeah. But, I would like to hear more. If any of you guys have been on your first dates in Japan, what did you get? Was it something good? Was it something better than that? We got
sexy.
One from Helen. It says, "Hello, Chris and Pete. I've always been wondering, are there any tourist scams that you should watch out for? Are there any people forcing their crappy mixtapes on you? Or some mascots charging unreasonable prices for some shitty pictures? Are there any restaurants or tourist sites that you should avoid at all costs? Let me know all about it. Best regards, Helen." Crappy mixtape? Have you ever had that, Pete?
Again, someone's been to Europe, so like London is awash with people giving their crappy CDs out, and also a lot like around London. I think it's just sounds like Helen's been to London. People dressed as in dirty Pikachu costumes. I'm obsessed with dirty Pikachu costumes because there's nothing more tragic than someone who just can't look after their own Pikachu costume, walking around with a bucket trying to collect cash. To get for your kids to have a picture taken with a dirty old Pikachu. Dirty old Pikachu. Pika Pika.
Does it work? Dressing up in a costume, does that actually work when it comes to
I guess
fundraising?
It does. But, because the kid always runs over, don't they? So if you're walking around with your Bens and the Ben will run over to Pikachu because it's dirty Pikachu and everyone loves dirty Pikachu. Down on his luck Pikachu, as I call him. And obviously the parents feel obliged to get involved in the scam / funding drive, let's say. So
I have a confession. I remember when I was at university, I did some sort of fundraising. I think it was for Save the Children, was the name of the charity. It was a long time ago. I can't remember it. But I remember I went to Brighton with some friends. We dressed up in costumes. And I went as bloody Jack Sparrow. My friend went as Mr. Incredible. And we stood around Brighton for like 5 or 6 hours trying to raise money. Do you know how much money I raised, Pete? Do you know how much I raised?
20 quid.
Can you guess? Put a quid?
£20.
It was nothing. Nothing, Pete.
You raised nothing?
I got nothing.
You were that inaccurate, or did nobody want a picture taken with you? Did you do it at night, or did you do it during the day?
They got the pictures. They got the pictures. Oh, they didn't put any bloody money in the bucket. Extortion.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Love it. They probably just thought you were coming from a club. Brighton's a party town.
What kind of club?
I don't know. Jack Sparrow, sea-based interest
club. Rum
watering
hole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for Rum Day.
Rum Day.
Are you here for Rum Day?
It would have been perfect for Rum Day, wouldn't it? God.
Fantastic.
I think there's only one photo of me dressed up as Jack Sparrow, and I'm going to make sure that never, ever
sees the
gets
light
anywhere
of day.
Near the internet.
Yeah, if you want to
go back
tweet
to
Chris
tourist scams
at Abroad Japan, ask demand for this man's tax returns and also his... his pictures of him dressed as Jack Sparrow. But we did a podcast, obviously, about the tourist scams in Japan, didn't we? If Helen goes back on our collection of podcasts we've got over at on the website, you should be able to find it. It wasn't that long ago, a few months, I think.
Yeah, and I think the scam at the time was the flag salesman, the flag sellers, the Russian flag sellers. I think they were Russian. Had just come over and they were trying to sell flags, Japanese flags, to Japanese people in a very confusing manner. And they were pretending to be deaf, weren't they? God, that was weird.
That's right, yes.
I don't
remember
the ins and outs. But yeah, go and check out the podcast, Helen. We went into a lot of detail and hopefully saved some people from the horrors of Kabukicho. And actually, the next story relates to Kabukicho, and I'll let you read it out, Pete.
All right,
another
then.
Swig of my precious water.
All right, this one's from Graham from Seattle. Hello, Graham from Seattle. Hello, Chris. And hello, Pete, says Graham. I've loved the podcast so far. Oh, stop, Graham. And the changes to 2 episodes per week has been greatly enjoyable since, as with many others, my wife and I are spending more time indoors lately. I wanted to share a story from my first trip to Japan back in 2015. My wife and I decided to spend a night out in Kabukicho. I wanted to try drinking at some of one of the infamously small bars at Golden Guy. We entered a Kushiyagi bar with a total of about 10 seats and began to sample the shop's specialities. 10's actually quite a lot of seats, you'd say, wouldn't you? After a few minutes, while conversing with the chef behind the corner, I noticed that a man sitting in the bar next to my wife was trying to give her some plates of tofu and edamame. He didn't work at the bar. He just appeared to be out drinking alone. And for some reason, he was very eager to share his beans with a couple of foreigners. I'd heard the stories about Kabukicho, and you need to be careful with strangers. I told the man I can understand Japanese as long as he speaks slowly. And his first question to me was, did you know that tofu is made from soybeans? I mean, I kind of knew that, but I still had questions. He explained that he was full. And he wanted to share his food with us. He said his name was Ken, and he was a 34-year-old fashion designer who just loved Japanese alcohol. After a short conversation, it seemed he was content to just sit and drink with us, and we were just being overly cautious. He asked us, have you ever had Japanese sake? I told him, yes, it's pretty common where we're from, and we really, really like it. Great, he said, and he ordered one for each of us. The bartender poured us our sake, and we thanked Ken profusely, expecting that to be the end of it. After chatting for a few minutes about our trip so far, he noticed that our glasses were empty. Do you know Japanese sushu? He asked us. I could tell where this was going. Ken-san wasn't Yakuza or a scammer or any kind of thief. He was just a vivacious drinker, intent on getting us absolutely hammered. He bought about 2 or 3 more rounds, each time refusing any attempt on our part to pay him back or buy the next one. This wasn't our first time dealing with what I'd call an aggressive hospitality expert, but it remains a fond memory of our first trip to Japan together. Eventually, Ken-san excused himself and headed home, but said that he wished us the very best and seemed happy to have shared a bit of his home country with us. Keep up the great work of the podcast. You guys are both a great inspiration to the rest of us, even Pete. How rude, Grim! How very rude! He said Ken sounded like a lot of fun, to be quite frank. Free booze, free food, free soybeans. Lovely old job.
I like the way they thought. I thought Graham felt it was like a scam or something.
Yeah.
This guy at the end of the bar just buying them things. But that's nice. And actually, Golden Guy is a good place to meet people.
It is.
Particularly in my favourite place, Deathmatch in Hell, which is an amazing place run by a really cool rock dude. But, you know, I think Golden Guy is nice. You just got to be careful where you pick. You've been there a few times, Pete. Have you actually been to a bar at all in Golden Guy?
Yeah, a few times. I did go in one. I think I told you before on the podcast. Went in one tiny little kind of indie bar, playing a bit of Beatles or whatever, and there wasn't enough tables, there wasn't enough seats at the bar, but he had like a back room, and so we went to a back room, just sat there, and he offered us karaoke. I was like, oh, nah, I've only had one drink, let's not do karaoke, and ruin Golden Guy for everyone. And then the guy came in and went, you want prostitutes? There's a brothel over the road. I was like, no, I'm all right, to be honest, mate. But generally, Golden Guy's lovely because you do meet people that you wouldn't normally meet because the bars are so small. In most bars, there's a cover charge. I think Japanese people realise that the entirety of that place now a nice little kind of like a place where tourists go. So if they want to practice their English or have a chat to English people or English speakers, certainly, they'll go to Golden Guy. And there's always a man who insists on playing Beatles music on his guitar. That he keeps behind the bar, and he'll just pop in, play a couple of Beatles songs, and then leave.
classic. I'm not surprised by that. I remember about a month ago, I saw that there was a bar in Golden Guy that you can rent out and film there and use as a film set. And I've been thinking up ideas potentially to film in there. But I couldn't think of anything unique enough or interesting enough. But quite a cool idea, quite a cool option, right? To rent an entire bar in Golden Guy and film in it. I am still scarred from a trip I had. Some friends and I went into a bar once, randomly picked one. That looked pricey. My friend wanted to go in for whatever reason. And I remember it was like 6,000 yen for two drinks, about $60, because it was clearly aimed at like Muppet tourists and they were trying to rinse their wallets. But my friend tried to lower our bill by saying that I had a YouTube channel and that I would shout out the bar on Twitter or something ridiculous. And I wasn't going to do it in the first place. I was like, no, that's a terrible idea. And the woman behind the bar, like, he was like, oh, yeah, you give us a discount. My friend will shout your bar out on Twitter. And I was like, no. And the woman was like, no, get out. I don't know what YouTube is. I don't know who Abroad in Japan is. Stop pestering me. Pay the bloody bill and get out. So awkward. God damn it.
Big licks broad here. Give it a shout out on Twitter.
Be careful. Be careful licks which friends licks. You go to a bar with. Yeah. They'll try and exploit you and your Twitter. When you're Twitter verified, you could shout out a bar and get a discount next
would
time
that really, I mean, would that really, does the blue ticks mean anything? I mean, they give them to anyone. It's, so far, I've heard Chris Broad, but.
Don't rub it in, Pete. Don't rub it in.
I think it's more likely that anyone well known. Not having a blue tick is more of a good thing than having a blue tick, I would say. I would say.
I disagree. I am waiting for that blue tick. I've got 100,000 people that follow that Twitter account and no blue tick. I feel my life is meaningless. Oh. And on that note, keep the stories, questions, comments coming into abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Particularly if you have any stories of your travels around Japan, they're always a good fun to listen to and lessons to be learned. We've learned today 15 minutes is the optimal time to buy an iPhone charger or get a notebook with some Dutch phrases in it. But we'll be back same time next week to do it all over again. Guys, for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourself a good few days and we'll see you on Sunday.
Lutic boys, assemble.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.